This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. President Donald Trump has not been in office long, but it's enough time for a budget proposal and a second executive order to limit travel to the United States. We're going to discuss what those issues and perhaps others could mean for Michigan's universities. Dan Hurley is the CEO of the Michigan Association of State Universities, and he joins us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing. Thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
And here in the studio to participate in the questioning is WMUK's John Oliver. Until recently, he was on the faculty at Texas State University. John, thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
And you have the first question for Dan Hurley.
Hey, Dan, thanks for joining us today. The overarching question for us is to get an understanding of what you feel the impact of the Trump administration is or will be on education.
Well, a lot is to be seen. There's been a lot of pontification and rhetoric out there. But, I think early on, right now, of course, the big issue in American higher education is college access and affordability. And of everything we've seen through the campaign and early on in his administration, I think the most telling overture was his budget proposal, his so-called skinny budget, which had, at least his policy priorities are laid out. And when it comes to higher education, programs having to do with college readiness, federal financial aid, really took a hit or are slated to take a hit. And so I can go into some detail there, but I think there, could be some significant consternation if, and that's a big if, these budget cuts were to go through to fruition. There would be, I think, a negative impact on college affordability in Michigan and throughout the country. So that would be one area. There are some other areas, I think, in the longer, mid-range term, having to do with federal regulation involving higher education, consumer protection. There are some implications there. And then, as you mentioned, the travel ban, Michigan has a lot at stake as it involves international students, and would be happy to go into some greater detail there.
So, Dan, let's unpack what you're speaking on, the budget proposal, the skinny budget. So education has seen an increase over the last, 20 years? How would that be any different now with the budget?
Well, the president's FY 2018 executive budget blueprint called for a 13% cut to the U.S. Department of Education. That's about $9 billion. Overarchingly, across all domestic spending areas, the attempt is to offset about a $54 billion increase for the Departments of Defense, Homeland Security, and Veterans Administration. As it involves college readiness, there is several hundred million dollars of proposed cuts in federal programs that help disadvantaged students prepare and succeed in college. There are some outreach programs referred to as TRIO programs that support the progress of low-income, first-generation, and disabled students starting as early as middle school. There are several hundred million dollars cut out of the what's called the Gear Up competitive grant program, and that provides, again, similar multi-years of support for tutoring and mentoring and scholarships for low-income students. And interestingly, based on a third-party analysis, about $85 million of federal support cut from historically black colleges and universities, despite the recent White House meeting with HBCU leaders. So that's college readiness. On federal financial aid, lots to be concerned about. There right now, the huge federal Pell Grant program, which is kind of the grandfather program for low-income students, is running a surplus. And so the budget proposal takes about $4 billion out of that surplus. But my concern is that right now we're actually been on an 8-year, 9-year economic growth cycle here, and we could enter a downturn anytime. And if that were to happen, demand for Pell Grant monies would go up. And the budget on other federal financial aid issues calls for the complete elimination for what's called the SEOG program, Supplemental Education Opportunity Grant, which is similar to the Pell Grant program that helps low-income students. And then there is a call for, quote unquote, significantly and drastically reducing the federal work study program, which is a federal matching dollar program for colleges and local employers to hire students part time while they attend college. So you add all that up, and it's a a notable impact on college affordability, especially for low-income students.
Okay, so Dan, what does that mean specifically for Michigan education and citizens who are looking to go into higher education here in the state?
Well, it would have an impact. We are a state that what ranks 32nd in per capita income. So, and given our population, we certainly between our 28 community colleges, a couple dozen independent colleges and universities that rely heavily on federal student aid support, and certainly the 300,000 students that are enrolled at Michigan's 15 public universities. If, again, I think Congress will, just as it is with the American Health Care Act, you know, there's a reason Congress is in place, and so I actually am relatively confident at this early stage that all those programs won't be cut. But if they were, certainly, you know, students and families would end up paying more for their college education, and unfortunately likely would be saddled with even higher levels of student debt to pay back once they've finished their post-secondary studies.
So what type of voice do our state legislators have in that conversation?
Well, that's a really good question. And right now, I don't necessarily see them clamoring to ward off these cuts to federal financial aid. And in fact, you know, at this very moment, as we work through our own state budget process, I think, you know, the state's higher education leaders are kind of on high alert for state support of higher education in Michigan. We have been for the last 15 years. Really, the higher education has been kind of the balancing wheel of the state budget. And the governor has called for about a 2.5% increase for state operating support for universities and a nice increase for state financial aid. That's all good. But we are definitely being vigilant as we walk through the rest of the budget process and hope that state lawmakers will continue to reinvest in higher education after more than about $1 billion disinvestment over the last 15 years. So I think state lawmakers, they have a voice as involves the channel to federal lawmakers, but it's my guess as it involves higher education issues, specifically federal financial aid, that they're probably not offering up too strong of a voice this early on.
Dan, can you maybe give us a little bit of a breakdown here in terms of how much higher education funding and concerns about student debt would be a federal issue and how much of it is a state issue?
That's going to vary a little bit on students, on depending on what kind of sector they are enrolled in, whether it's community colleges, public universities, or independent colleges.
Let's use state universities, since, you know, that's what we're mainly talking about here.
Yeah. Overall, the greatest impact is going to be at the state level, given that at the federal level, it's primarily need-based financial aid, specifically in the form of the Pell Grant. In Michigan, it's, you know, the state operating support more so than the state financial aid program, which is comparatively pretty limited. In Michigan, we offer about 1/3 of the national rate for student financial aid. Right now, only about $250 per student, compared to a national average of about $750 per student. So it's the state operating support that is most important. So that's what most of the focus is on for the higher education leaders in the state.
You mentioned legislators, state support, and you phrase balancing wheel. I caught that phrase because we know that President Trump visited Michigan, Detroit specifically, to speak to some of the automotive leaders. Do you see the cuts in education possibly impacting some of the industry here in the state?
Yeah, I do. You know, what's interesting is just the incredible demand for a higher educated citizenry workforce. When you look back, there was a great report conducted by the Georgetown University Center for Education and the Workforce that looked at all of the new jobs created since the end of the Great Recession, about 11.6 million jobs through last summer. And, you know, 99% of those jobs went to individuals in this country with some type of post-secondary education. About 8.5 million of those 11.5 million jobs went to those with a four-year degree. And on the flip side, only about 0.5% of all new jobs in this country over the last 6 years went to individuals with a high school diploma. So a huge demand. In Michigan, when you look at the, this is state data, you look at the top 50 high-wage, high-demand jobs through 2024, 36 of those require a four-year degree. And certainly plenty of those jobs are in disciplines that are associated with high-tech manufacturing and the automotive industry. You know, engineering, computer sciences, you name it. So there's definitely a direct correlation, I think, very direct in terms of college access, college affordability, and our ability as a state to create the talent pipeline we need to be competitive nationally and globally in the future.
I wonder, though, if that is also creating a little bit of the pressure here when we talk about costs, that there's this big demand to get a college education because the difference in pay, the difference in unemployment rate for college grads, non-college grads, et cetera, is so big. Is that also in part driving the pressure, which is then creating some of the higher costs and some of the higher debt load?
Certainly the data continues to show that for individuals and for states collectively, the more you learn, the more you earn. And there is a direct correlation with states, as you say, individuals' level of educational attainment and their annual earnings. Then the chasm continues to grow every year between those with some type of post-secondary credential, whether it's an associate's degree, bachelor's, master's, and so on, and those with a high school diploma or less. In Michigan, we are 32nd in educational attainment rate, those individuals with a two-year degree or more, and we're also 32nd in per capita earnings. And you look at the, you know, the most educated states in the country, they also have the highest per capita income. So there is a correlation, and, you know, but I would also say there's from a kind of a market standpoint, and Michigan, I think, has the most market-based public, you know, higher education system in the country, and the universities are competing on all types of factors, cost, quality, programming niches, et cetera. So I think there is a, and our university leaders definitely understand what has been happening out there, the state-to-student cost shift in paying for a college education, and they have put forth a lot of work to try to keep college costs at the lowest level possible for students and families.
Dan, Gordon opened our segment with mentioning the travel ban. I want to get to that by asking about visas for international students and scholars. Do you see that being impacted during our current administration?
You know, there were, certainly was just a whole bunch of confusion in the opening hours and days after that ban was implemented, however short that lasted. You know, right now I think there has been some clarification put forth, and I think, of course, now there's an injunction in place. So, but I think most people have, you know, students and scholars have returned, you know, back here safe and sound in the United States. My greatest concern is, you know, A, there's certainly a huge incongruence of values, you know, involving American higher education generally and this travel ban and who we are as a country and as a society overall. But my biggest concern is the reputational hit that the U.S. is taking on this and what that could produce in terms of international talent coming to America, in Michigan in particular, whether it's students or scientists, professors. And right now it's too early to tell, but there has been some preliminary surveys out there that show a huge drop off in international students inquiring with U.S. universities. And likewise, you look to the north, Canadian universities are reporting huge increases in inquiries and applications, et cetera. So I think this, you know, could hurt Michigan Public Universities long term. We are a top 10 state in terms of international students. And you know, no doubt, you look at the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Western Michigan University, Wayne State, Michigan Tech, among others, that host a lot of very talented scientists that bring their talents and grant monies to the U.S. So I think, you know, that could be in the kind of short order, you know, the next 18 months, we'll see. But I think there could be a significant hit to both talent pipeline and kind of a revenue hit to universities if this, you know, travel ban continues to be high on the radar, even if there is an injunction in place.
It's worth noting that the blog on your website, the last two entries from you, one was about the travel ban, but the one before that was titled "That Michigan's Demographics Must Not Determine Its Destiny," which was highlighting the fact that Michigan does not have a big pipeline right now of students that will be graduating from high school just based on the age and demographics of the state. So what I'm wondering is, does that make bringing students in from overseas an even bigger issue for Michigan than it might be for other states, because you still want students to go to the universities? There's going to be places for them. And is it more important because Michigan just doesn't have as many high school graduates coming through the system right now?
Yeah, there's definitely an implication there. Michigan is a top three state nationally in terms of its forecasted decline of high school graduates. It's a demographic challenge. But I think it's very important that we not look at that trend line and say, "Oh well, we need to give up." We as a state policy need to retrench. We cannot do that. That is giving up on, you know, who we are. And so there are a lot of things that can be done that are being done. One is increasing college readiness, so more high school graduates are actually prepared to enter and succeed in college, boosting our retention rates and having more students graduate. We actually are a top state in terms of the proportion of our workforce that has some post-secondary education but not a college degree, 2 or 4 year. And so there's some opportunity there to get more adults, working adults, back into college, our 2 year community colleges and universities, to get them credentialed. But as you say, yes, we have been a top 10 state for international students. We've had, up until this current year, 10% growth rates. When you look at all the revenue generated by these international students, it comes up to about $1 billion. And if you think about it, you know, the customer, international students, are coming to our universities, but we're kind of exporting what we have to offer. And so another way to look at it is it's $1 billion annual export. And if individuals from overseas, even if it's not from those affected countries, if they see that they're just concerned about the, you know, whether it's their safety or threats of discrimination, et cetera, a lack of tolerance or inclusion, diversity, they may head elsewhere. There's a lot of countries that would love to have the world's most talented students.
So, Dan, can you give us somewhat of an upside of some of the things that are occurring that could help propel us to a higher level of educational attainment for the state?
So that's a good question. I don't want to come across as too much of a pessimist. I think that there is a lot of work going on at the institutional level across all sectors and institutions. There, I think for really decades in this country, there was a lot of focus about college access and affordability, get students in the door, and the conversation may end there. That is obviously still remarkably important, especially when you look at what has happened nationally and here in Michigan, the disinvestment, state disinvestment in higher education. But there is a lot that can happen. I think what has happened in recent years is the focus has gone from college access to more of an emphasis on student retention and student completion. And so a lot of the universities have put forth a lot of activity on whether it's kind of help reaching down to the pipeline and building a very thoughtful kind of summer bridge programs to make sure students are prepared once they hit the college campuses, more intrusive advising with students, and then some pretty impressive use of student data analytics, if you will, and using kind of big data at a very student precision level to work with students, you know, right as, you know, if there are any indications where they're faltering in class, for whatever reason, to work with the students, you know, at that moment, not, you know, at the end of the semester when, you know, it's too late. So, and we are, all the public universities in Michigan are showing improvements in student retention. A lot more can be done, but I think at the institutional level, in terms of student success programs and policies and best practices in that arena, that gives me a lot of hope. I do think, as much rhetoric there might be around some other, you know, issues at the federal level, I don't see a huge impact in the very near future. And things at the state level, a little tenuous maybe at the moment as we go through this current budget cycle, but we are on, we've seen 6 years of consecutive reinvestment, and if all goes well, according at least to what the budget, the governor's budget blueprint is, the universities will have been collectively restored in this next budget process, next budget cycle, compared to where they were about 6 years ago when they suffered a significant cut. So those are some positive things taking place.
I wanted to follow up a little bit on that idea of college readiness. Are educational institutions maybe getting out of their silos a little bit and seeing this more as a holistic effort where there's more interchange, interaction between colleges and high schools, maybe universities and community colleges, et cetera?
Certainly, but there can be a lot more. I think it may be pronounced here in Michigan, and I think there is a little bit too much of a superficial kind of bifurcation between K-12 and the public university sector. I do know that each university would definitely have its own story to tell about, you know, a tremendous amount of outreach within its local area, regional kind of ISDs and school systems. But I think more can be done. One thing I would cite is that, at least in my year and a half back here in Michigan, I've been very impressed with what has been taking place between the state's public universities and the community colleges. We do have a rather autonomous, independent system of governance in the state, with community college universities operating with their locally elected or gubernatorially appointed or with the universities, three of them, statewide elected governing boards. But even with respect to that governance system, there is a tremendous amount of collaboration taking place. And so in the last couple of years, the community colleges and the universities have worked extensively on transfer issues, on the continuous quest to have the most seamless transfer process there are, from two-year schools to four-year schools, and you know, two-year to two-year and four-year to four-year, all around. There's a lot of swirling that takes place among students in various institutions, and we need to work and are working collectively to see that there isn't leakage of kind of credits. And there's a lot of factors involved. People do make, you know, career choices and educational choices that sometimes will result in the loss of credit, but it's incumbent upon the institutions in the state to at least be very transparent on what their processes and protocols are and policies in terms of credit transfer and degree transfer. So there's a lot taking place there and a lot to look forward to in that arena.
So Dan, thanks a lot. You've shared a lot about what institutions are doing and can do. We've talked about what the administration is doing and preparing or planning. What work do you see available or needed for individual citizens to do to assure that the educational gains are sustained that we've acquired over the last few years?
Yeah, I think that, you know, despite that there is a little, you know, there are some legitimate concerns around college affordability, I think, you know, my primary answer to your question would be one of attitude as opposed to anything financial related. And I think when you look at the data out there in terms of the reward that individuals and through their, you know, the education, their families and their communities will benefit by participating in higher education. A reverse of that is the message that if our younger generation has any, you know, hope of achieving a middle-class lifestyle, it will be remarkably important for them to obtain some type of post-secondary degree. Associate's degree, even some type of certificate in a high-demand field, is absolutely critical. So I think one thing that is important around, you know, dinner tables throughout the state is just, you know, conversations on around kind of the state's culture of education and having a, you know, a post-secondary education oriented attitude here in the state. I think it's remarkably important. Beyond that, certainly, you know, being encouraging of increased, this is me talking, of course, public support for higher education. There are huge benefits to the state as a whole, to society, and individuals, of course, for going to college. But given where we are demographically, economically, it is very important that higher education in Michigan is viewed as a public good with the cost thereof distributed in some way and not borne solely upon the student consumer. If we go that route, we'd have many, many fewer people attending college, getting a degree, and then turning around and contributing very dynamically to our state's economy.
Dan Hurley is the CEO of the Michigan Association of State Universities. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan Hurley joined us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing, and also thanks to WMUK's John Oliver.
It's good to be here.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.